We're talking today about the vaccine and its effects on fertility, because that might actually explain one of the justifications for why they want to vaccinate the entire planet for a virus that has a lower fatality rate than an average seasonal influenza. This article is from the National Pulse. ABC Fertility Report. Men may want to consider freezing sperm before COVID vaccine. Wow, that's really going to instill confidence, isn't it? An ABC affiliate in Florida has suggested that men may want to consider freezing their sperm prior to vaccination in a report about fertility and the COVID-19 vaccine. Health reporter Christy Krueger and Special Projects producer Kathleen Corso wrote in their December 20th article for local news, "The University of Miami is investigating the possible effects of the coronavirus vaccine on male fertility." Lead researchers Dr. Ranjith Ramasamy, a reproductive urologist with UHealth, initiated an early study which found the virus was present in the testicles for up to 6 months following infection. This spurred his team to question the virus effect on sperm and reproduction. His team is now looking at the potential impact of the vaccine as well. "We're evaluating the sperm parameters and the quality before the vaccine and after the vaccine. From the biology of the COVID vaccine, we believe it shouldn't affect fertility, but we want to do a study to make sure," I believe that's supposed to be men who want to have kids in the future, "to assure them it's safe to go ahead and get the vaccine," Ramasamy said. "Study participants must have a fertility evaluation before receiving the vaccine. To protect fertility, some men may want to consider freezing their sperm prior to vaccination. How about not getting vaccinated against it and not taking the risk of being left infertile?" Now, talk of the vaccine's impact on fertility has been doing the rounds for a while now. This article is from 2020news.de. Dr. Wodarg and Dr. Yeadon request a stop of all corona vaccination studies and call for co-signing the petition. On December 1st, 2020, the ex-Pfizer head of respiratory research, Dr. Michael Yeadon, and the lung specialist and former head of the public health department, Dr. Wolfgang Wodarg, filed an application with the EMA, the European Medicine Agency, responsible for EU-wide drug approval, for the immediate suspension of all SARS-CoV-2 vaccine studies, in particular the BioNTech-Pfizer study on BNT162b, UDRA-CT number 2020-002641-42. Dr. Wodarg and Dr. Yeadon demand that the studies for the protection of the life and health of the volunteers should not be continued until a study design is available that is suitable to address the significant safety concerns expressed by an increasing number of renowned scientists against the vaccine and the study design. On the one hand, the petitioners demand that due to the known lack of accuracy of the PCR test in a serious study, a so-called Sanger sequencing must be used. This is the only way to make reliable statements on the effectiveness of a vaccine against COVID-19. On the basis of the many different PCR tests of highly varying quality, neither the risk of disease nor a possible vaccine benefit can be determined with the necessary certainty, which is why testing the vaccine on humans is unethical per se. Furthermore, they demand that it must be excluded, e.g. by means of animal experiments, that risks already known from previous studies, which partly originate from the nature of the coronaviruses, can be realized. The concerns are directed in particular to the following points. The formation of so-called non-neutralizing antibodies can lead to an exaggerated immune reaction, especially when the test person is confronted with the real wild virus after vaccination. This so-called antibody-dependent amplification, ADE, has long been known from experiments with corona vaccines in cats, for example. In the course of these studies, all cats that initially tolerated the vaccination well died after catching the wild virus. Well, that's very, very concerning indeed. The vaccinations are expected to produce antibodies against spike proteins of SARS-CoV-2. However, spike proteins also contain syncytin homologous proteins, forgive me if I've butchered the pronunciation of that, which are essential for the formation of the placenta in mammals such as humans. It must be absolutely ruled out that a vaccine against SARS-CoV-2 could trigger an immune reaction against syncytin-1, as otherwise infertility of indefinite duration could result in vaccinated women. The mRNA vaccines from BioNTech Pfizer contain polyethylene glycol, PEG, 70% of people develop antibodies against this substance. This means that many people can develop allergic, potentially fatal reactions to the vaccination. The much too short duration of the studies does not allow a realistic estimation of the late effects. As in the narcolepsy cases after the swine flu vaccination, millions of healthy people would be exposed to an unacceptable risk if any emergency approval were to be granted and the possibility of observing the late effects of the vaccination were to follow. Nevertheless, BioNTech-Pfizer apparently submitted an application for emergency approval on December 1st, 2020. I commend Dr. Wodarg and Dr. Yeadon for bringing this to the public's attention. And then there's this Pfizer document, which I believe is dated November 2020. A phase 1, 2, 3 placebo-controlled randomized observer-blind dose-finding study to evaluate the safety, tolerability, immunogenicity, and efficacy of SARS-CoV-2 RNA vaccine candidates against COVID-19 in healthy individuals. 10.4 Appendix 4 Contraceptive Guidance. 10.4.1 Male Participant Reproductive Inclusion Criteria. Male participants are eligible to participate if they agree to the following requirements during the intervention period and for at least 28 days after the last dose of study intervention, which corresponds to the time needed to eliminate reproductive safety risk of the study interventions. Refrain from donating sperm. Why? Could this sperm be infertile after they've been vaccinated? And could that sperm pass that infertility onto a fertile woman, perhaps? Plus, either be abstinent from heterosexual intercourse with a female of childbearing potential as their preferred and usual lifestyle, abstinent on a long-term and persistent basis, and agree to remain abstinent, or must agree to use a male condom when engaging in any activity that allows for passage of ejaculate to another person. Well, that sounds highly concerning. How many people who are about to get the vaccine are actually going to take the time to read this document? How many even know that it exists? Infertility appears to be a legitimate concern, and I don't believe this is an accident. I believe that one of the intentions of those behind this manufactured plandemic crisis and the vaccine solution is to reduce the human population by sterilizing an enormous amount of people, in addition to probably undermining the human immune system and creating more sickness and death. It would explain why they're pushing this vaccine on the population and doing everything in their power to coerce people into taking it. We know it takes about a decade to make a vaccine at least somewhat safe, and the globalists know this too. And we know the PCR testing is bullshit and merely designed to generate a high volume of false positives in order to justify the case-demic and justify lockdowns to destroy the economy for the Great Reset. We know there's been no noteworthy excess mortality worldwide. And they know all of this too. They also know that there's no way the vaccine can be safe given how quickly that it's been manufactured. And to be honest, I'm being far too kind by referring to this thing as a vaccine. This substance most certainly can't be a vaccine given that there's no way it will vaccinate against the virus. And I believe, clearly, it has nefarious purposes. The people obsessed with population control and how awful human beings are for the environment and how we're all contributing to climate change, these same people wax on about this constantly and are apparently also the same people who desperately want to save all of us from a virus that's less deadly than a seasonal influenza by injecting every single person on the planet. Now, come on, that's highly suspicious. You have to wonder if the contents of the so-called vaccine might have an off-label purpose. Let's continue by talking about Bill Gates, the man at the center of the COVID-19 vaccine. Remember when he said the following in 2010?
First, we've got population. Now, the world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
So Gates appears to be obsessed with coming up with ways of reducing the population. When he talks about reproductive services and healthcare, he's referring, of course, to abortion, i.e. murdering unborn children. But how do vaccines help to reduce the population? Surely, if anything, vaccines would make people healthier and therefore extend life and increase the population. Well, not necessarily, according to Gates' own logic.
Here we can see a chart that looks at the total world population over the last several hundred years. And at first glance, this is a bit scary. We go from less than a billion in 1800, and then 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7.4 billion where we are today is happening even faster.
Whoa, scary. How will the world cope with all those humans? But seriously, should we be alarmed about this? The same people who've been telling us to be terrified about data models regarding climate change and CO2 levels and data models about COVID-19 and the bullshit PCR case-demic are the same people telling us that there's too many people on the planet and population growth needs to be reduced. But is there too many people on the planet? Are these population numbers actually worth freaking out about? Or is the planet comfortably able to manage them? In the same way that all of these doomsayers have made future predictions about CO2 emissions and global warming causing sea level rises that never came to pass, and destruction of the environment that also never came to pass. And with COVID, they told us that all the hospitals would be overrun. But none of this happened either. And they also tell us that there's going to come a point when the human population will be unsustainable in the future, and therefore something needs to be done to reduce it now. We're expected to simply take the predictive data models of the same people who lie to us about climate change and COVID as gospel and believe that even though the planet can sustain 7.4 billion humans right now, for some reason, when it reaches 11 billion by 2100, apparently that's going to be too much.
So Melinda and I wondered whether providing new medicines and keeping children alive, would that create more of a population problem? What we found out is that as health improves, families choose to have less children. And this effect is very, very dramatic. We find that in every country of the world, this is repeated. The population growth goes down as we improve health. So we've taken that chart that shows the global population growth.
We know that Bill Gates has vaccinated a lot of kids in the third world. Now, he's telling us that these vaccines prevent children from dying young, and as a result of that, parents then just choose to have less children. Really? That's his logic? That every father and mother in these countries just makes the exact determination like a collective hive mind? Bullshit. Let's read about Bill Gates' actual record with vaccines in the third world. This is from Children's Health Defense, written by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Gates' globalist vaccine agenda. A win-win for pharma and mandatory vaccination. Vaccines, for Bill Gates, are a strategic philanthropy that feed his many vaccine-related businesses, including Microsoft's ambition to control a global vaccination ID enterprise and give him dictatorial control of global health policy. Gates' obsession with vaccines seems to be fueled by a conviction to save the world with technology, promising his share of $450 million of $1.2 billion to eradicate polio. Gates took control of India's National Technical Advisory Group on Immunization, which mandated up to 50 doses of polio vaccines through overlapping immunization programs to children before the age of 5. Indian doctors blame the Gates campaign for a devastating non-polio acute flaccid paralysis epidemic, that's abbreviated to NPAFP, that paralyzed 490,000 children beyond expected rates between 2000 and 2017. In 2017, the Indian government dialed back Gates' vaccine regimen and asked Gates and his vaccine policies to leave India. NPAFP rates dropped precipitously. In 2017, the World Health Organization reluctantly admitted that the global explosion in polio is predominantly vaccine strain. The most frightening epidemics in Congo, Afghanistan, and the Philippines are all linked to vaccines. In fact, by 2018, 70% of global polio cases were vaccine strain. In 2014, the Gates Foundation funded tests of experimental HPV vaccines developed by GlaxoSmithKline and Merck on 23,000 young girls in remote Indian provinces. Approximately 1,200 suffered severe side effects, including autoimmune and fertility disorders. 7 died. Indian government investigations charged that Gates-funded researchers committed pervasive ethical violations, pressuring vulnerable village girls into the trial, bullying parents, forging consent forms, and refusing medical care to the injured girls. The case is now in the country's Supreme Court. By the way, I'll include this article linked below, along with all the other articles, in a source link on my website. In 2010, the Gates Foundation funded a phase 3 trial of GSK's experimental malaria vaccine, killing 151 African infants and causing serious adverse effects, including paralysis, seizure, and febrile convulsions, to 1,048 of the 5,949 children. During Gates' 2002 Men AfriVac campaign in sub-Saharan Africa, Gates' operatives forcibly vaccinated thousands of African children against meningitis. Approximately 50 of the 500 children vaccinated developed paralysis. South African newspapers complained, "We are guinea pigs for the drug makers." Nelson Mandela's former senior economist, Professor Patrick Bond, describes Gates' philanthropic practices as ruthless and immoral. In 2010, when Gates committed $10 billion to the World Health Organization, he said, "We must make this the decade of vaccines." A month later, Gates said in a TED talk that new vaccines could reduce population, and 4 years later, in 2014, Kenya's Catholic Doctors Association accused the World Health Organization of chemically sterilizing millions of unwilling Kenyan women with a tetanus vaccine campaign. Independent labs found a sterility formula in every vaccine tested. After denying the charges, World Health Organization finally admitted it had been developing the sterility vaccines for over a decade. Similar accusations came from Tanzania, Nicaragua, Mexico, and the Philippines. A 2017 study, Morganson et al. 2017, showed that World Health Organization's popular DTP vaccine is killing more African children than the diseases it prevents. DTP-vaccinated girls suffered 10 times the death rate of children who had not yet received the vaccine. World Health Organization has refused to recall the lethal vaccine, which it forces upon tens of millions of African children annually. Yeah, I personally wouldn't be trusting this guy's vaccines. Global public health advocates around the world accuse Gates of steering World Health Organization's agenda away from the projects that had proven to curb infectious diseases, clean water, hygiene, nutrition, and economic development. The Gates Foundation spends only about $650 million of its $5 billion budget on these areas. They say he has diverted agency resources to serve his personal philosophy that good health only comes in a syringe. The human immune system does not need constant pharmaceutical intervention in the form of regular vaccines every couple of years to deal with every coronavirus that comes along. We've been living with these things forever. And I want to point out that I've never been anti-vax per se. I've always been concerned with vaccinations being pushed on the public, especially on people who don't need them. It should always be a choice. You are, after all, putting a foreign substance into your body, and you don't know anything about it. You don't know what's in it. The article continues. In addition to using his philanthropy to control World Health Organization, UNICEF, Gavi, and PATH, Gates funds a private pharmaceutical company that manufactures vaccines and is donating $50 million to 12 pharmaceutical companies to speed up development of a coronavirus vaccine. In his recent media appearances, Gates appears confident that the COVID-19 crisis will now give him the opportunity to force his dictatorial vaccine programs on all American children and adults. So let's go back now and have a look at some of the influences in Bill Gates' life, starting with his father, William Gates Sr.
Really grabbed me as urgent were issues related to population, reproductive health.
But did you come to reproductive issues as an intellectual?
When I was growing up, my parents were always involved in various volunteer things. My dad was head of Planned Parenthood. And it was very controversial to be involved with.
So William Gates Sr. was on the board of Planned Parenthood, an organization that describes itself as a non-profit that provides reproductive health care, which, of course, is a euphemism for abortion services, you know, murdering unborn children. And that takes us to a lady by the name of Margaret Sanger. This article is from capitalresearch.org, written by Hayden Ludwig. Planned Parenthood, the biggest bastion of eugenics and white supremacy in America, debunking the left's favorite defense of Margaret Sanger. Make no mistake, Planned Parenthood was built on population control schemes, allied with racists who wanted racial hierarchy laws to preserve global white supremacy, eugenicists who sought to beautify America by stopping the unfit from reproducing, and technocrats who sneered at the masses too moronic to govern themselves. In firing Lena Wen, Planned Parenthood sent the world a clear message. We've returned to our racist roots. After all, population control was the linchpin of the birth control philosophy advanced by Planned Parenthood founder Margaret Sanger, a member of the Socialist Party of America. Far from a simple supporter of contraception, Sanger fused radical feminism with scientific socialism. She envisaged a future utopia in which Western civilization purged itself from the unfit and feeble-minded, thereby elevating the dignity of motherhood to create a race of well-born children. She wrote in 1922 that the highest aim of birth control, later called Planned Parenthood, literally controlling when women have their babies, would arrest the threat of reckless procreation and ensure that children are only born of the mother's conscious desire under conditions which render possible the heritage of health. Sanger's alliance with eugenicists wasn't born of convenience, but rather a common cause. In 1921, Sanger penned an article entitled "The Eugenic Value of Birth Control Propaganda," in which she argued that the campaign for birth control is not merely of eugenic value, but is practically identical in ideal with the final aims of eugenics. The article later goes on to say, but the group also paints Sanger as a hero reluctantly forced to align her cause with racists. To support this claim, Planned Parenthood quotes a letter by Sanger supposedly showing how much she loathed racism and bigotry. I admire the courage of a government that takes a stand on sterilization of the unfit, and second, my admiration is subject to the interpretation of the word unfit. If by unfit is meant the physical or mental defects of a human being, that is an admirable gesture. But if unfit refers to races or religions, then that is another matter which I frankly deplore. We chased down the quotation to a letter from Sanger dated February 13, 1934, to Sidney L. Lassell, Jr., a Yale University freshman, who sent her a questionnaire to be published in the student-run paper Yale News. In it, the student asked Sanger, "What are your views on the German program of sterilizing the unfit?" To which she offered her oft-quoted reply. Lassell, Jr. was referring to Sanger's view of the law for the prevention of hereditarily diseased offspring, enacted in July 1933, just 6 months after Adolf Hitler became Chancellor of Germany, making it one of the first statutes passed by the Nazi government. The law Sanger hailed as courageous established genetic health courts consisting of a judge and doctor who had the power to forcibly sterilize individuals suffering from a handful of hereditary diseases and deficiencies, including alcoholism. By 1945, over 400,000 people were forcibly sterilized by these courts. You may be beginning to get the impression that Planned Parenthood's agenda has not in fact been anything to do with women's rights or my body, my choice kind of thing, but primarily the organization was concerned with population control and eugenics. Chief among those supporters was Sanger's American Birth Control League, later named Planned Parenthood, whose press release calling on the government to sterilize millions of individuals is left unmentioned in Planned Parenthood's flattering biography of Sanger. The press release was published February 7, 1934, mere weeks before her oft-quoted letter to Lassell Jr. To the average, normal, responsible parent, birth control is a necessity, essentially in the spacing of children or in limiting the size of the family in consideration of the mother's health and the father's earnings. But there are hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of individuals in this country who have not the moral responsibility to care for children, nor to realize the seriousness of irresponsible childbearing. These people should be sterilized. They can be classed as the moron, the mental defective, feeble-minded, certain forms of insanity where the cure is doubtful or uncertain, besides those afflicted with epilepsy or other transmissible diseases. Sanger and the American Birth Control League even suggested that pensions be paid to all paupers, morons, feeble-minded, mentally and morally deficient persons who will submit to sterilization, and who gets to determine who the morons are, who the feeble-minded and mentally, morally and deficient people are. That was, they concluded, a much better solution than to pass them out a dole while they increase their numbers tenfold. Margaret Sanger is quoted as saying such things as, "The most merciful thing that the large family does to one of its infant members is to kill it. The most urgent problem today is how to limit and discourage the overall fertility of the mentally and physically defective. A marriage license shall in itself give husband and wife only the right to a common household and not the right to parenthood. No woman shall have the legal right to bear a child, and no man shall have the right to become a father without a permit for parenthood. On the subject of Planned Parenthood, here's an interesting document that's been reproduced on the website jaffmemo.com, and the website reads, "The Jaff Memo is an infamous document produced by Planned Parenthood in 1969, which, in a single page, conveys the lengths that elitists are willing to go to manage the US population. Planned Parenthood portrays itself as an advocate for women's rights and autonomy and sexual freedom, but items on the list reveal a different story. How to reduce the population of the United States? Here are some of the ideas that were on the table. Fertility control agents in the water supply. Induce chronic depression. Compulsory abortion, compulsory sterilization, discouragement of private home ownership. Not exactly the sorts of things consistent with autonomy. The memo is a synthesis of a number of ideas then in wide circulation, both inside and outside of Planned Parenthood. Because of its concise summary of these ideas, the memo serves as a useful illustration of a whole range of disconcerting policy considerations. The memo itself indicates that it was derived primarily from people such as M. Young, W. Shockley, L. Day, and others. Circumstances that unfolded in the United States shortly after the memo was circulated privately strongly suggest that some of these proposals at least were implemented. Whether or not they were implemented because of the advocacy of Planned Parenthood's Population Control Division, Frederick Jaff being in charge of that division, is not the concern of this site. That said, the reader should be aware that these organizations are very aware of their complicity in such schemes and have been active in trying to alter the record. As it pertains to this memo, Jaff's own son, David Jaff, has been active on the internet whitewashing the record regarding his father. Tracking the deliberate attempts to obfuscate the record is not the point of this site. Rather, informing people of the existence and content of the memo and raising reasonable suspicion that Planned Parenthood and its ilk is not how it presents itself, that is the purpose of this site. Still, documentation may be provided as it comes available to substantiate those suspicions, and the public is invited to provide their own. So, let's take a look at this document, shall we? Proposed measures to reduce fertility by universality or selectivity of impact in the US. Universal impact, social constraints. Restructure family. Postpone or avoid marriage. Alter image of ideal family size. Compulsory education of children. Encourage increased homosexuality. Educate for family limitation. Fertility control agents in water supply. Encourage women to work. Very interesting so far. All of this seems to be in line with the cultural and social revolutions pushed by the neoliberal globalist agenda and the left for the past few decades. Encouraging women to receive an education and to enter the workforce, for example, the feminist movement, is certainly one way of reducing birth rates because it means that young women spend their prime fertile years of their 20s not starting families. Selective impact depending on socioeconomic status. Economic deterrence incentives. Modify tax policies. Substantial marriage tax. Child tax. Tax married more than single. Remove parents' tax exemption. Additional taxes on parents with more than one or two children in school. Reduce, eliminate paid maternity leave or benefits. Reduce, eliminate children's or family allowances. Bonuses for delayed marriage and greater child spacing. It also says eliminate welfare payments after first two children. And then it says chronic depression. Require women to work and provide few child care facilities. It also talks about social controls. Compulsory abortion of out-of-wedlock pregnancies. Well, we're certainly not there yet in the West, but who knows what the future holds. Compulsory abortions have happened, of course, in China. We've also recently seen the rise of things like the birth strike movement, which is women choosing not to have children because of climate change. I could definitely see that happening. To help reduce humanity's carbon footprint, apparently. I wouldn't be surprised if in the future an argument is made to control reproduction in order to comply with carbon emissions agreements. The climate agenda is ultimately all tied back to population control as well. And then it says, compulsory sterilization of all who have had two children, except for a few who would be allowed three. Confine childbearing to only a limited number of adults. Stock certificate type permits for children. Housing policies. Discouragement of private home ownership. stop awarding public housing based on family size. And the last column says, measures predicated on existing motivation to prevent unwanted pregnancy. Payments to encourage sterilization. Payments to encourage contraception. Payments to encourage abortion. Abortion and sterilization on demand. Allow harmless contraceptives to be distributed non-medically. Improve contraceptive technology. Make contraception truly available and accessible. Improve maternal health care, with family planning a core element. Some of those goals have already been achieved across the world, as we know. So back to Bill Gates. Himself and his wife Melinda have another organization, which is called the Bill and Melinda Gates Institute for Population and Reproductive Health. Here's the website. On the GatesFoundation.org website, I found a press release from May 22, 1999. Gates Foundations give Johns Hopkins $20 million gift to School of Public Health for Population, Reproductive Health, Baltimore. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundations have committed $20 million to create the Bill and Melinda Gates Institute for Population and Reproductive Health at the Johns Hopkins University School of Public Health. The gift reflects the commitment of the foundations established by Microsoft Corp Chairman Bill Gates and his wife Melinda French Gates to invest in global health projects. It builds on the foundation's 1997 commitment of $2.25 million to the school, which established a training and research program for family planning and reproductive health specialists from developing nations. That program will be the foundation for the new institute. The response from the developing world to family and reproductive health initiatives launched with the original Gates Foundation's gift has been dramatic, said William R. Brody, president of Johns Hopkins. This exciting new level of support from the foundations allow our faculty to begin to meet the really overwhelming demand in these nations for homegrown expertise. We are most grateful to Bill and Melinda Gates for making this possible. It also says, Laurie Schwab-Zabin, principal investigator on the project and a professor of population and family health sciences at Johns Hopkins, said the Gates gift recognizes that building capacity, investing in human and institutional development, is the greatest contribution we can make. Global population grows by 100 million each year, Zabin said. More than 100 million women who want to delay childbearing or have no more children do not have access to contraception, she said. Death and disability due to childbearing are major health problems in the developing world. We are so grateful that the Gates Foundations have helped bring to life our shared vision of what an academic institution can do to address these issues through a combination of scholarship and science, Zabin said. Now, here's a Salon article from 1998. The title is Bill Gates a Closet Liberal? In 1997, Bill Gates contributed $35,000 in support of a Washington State ballot initiative supporting gun control. In 1993, he ponied up $80,000 to fight a conservative initiative seeking to roll back state taxes. And ever since 1994, the William H. Gates III Foundation, Bill's private philanthropic funnel, has been busy channeling millions to groups that specialize in reproductive health and family planning. So why is Bill Gates so concerned with what they refer to as reproductive health and family planning? Might it be for the same reason that Margaret Sanger was? Population control? Let's read more. Let's skip forward a bit here. No businessman as famous for being as ultra-competitive as Bill Gates can ever escape cynical accusations that his every move is motivated by greed, nor should he. But the smaller details of Gates' giving lead us to a different truth. It is much more difficult to discern strategic Microsoft advantage in his support for handgun safety. And his cold cash concern for family planning could even be construed as asking for trouble. The groups that the Gates Foundation is giving money to have close ideological and organizational ties with pro-choice bastions like Planned Parenthood. Religious right zealots are already beginning to pay attention. Who needs that kind of controversy today? The Gates Foundation has given $750,000 over 3 years to the Seattle-based PATH, Program for Appropriate Technology in Health, funding that has, in part, been used for such work as a quality assurance survey of contraceptives in 22 countries. The Alan Guttmacher Institute received $1 million over 3 years for an international examination of issues facing young women around the world. And finally, most recently, the Department of Population Dynamics at Johns Hopkins University received $2.3 million for an array of programs aimed at training international specialists in reproductive health and family planning. Reproductive health and family planning is a buzz phrase that emerged out of the 1994 United Nations Cairo Conference on Population Issues, said Dr. Gordon Perkin, president of PATH. In the past, the research topic used to be referred to as population control, though, said Dr. Perkin, the words population control are not used anymore, except by people who don't know the field. Well, the term population control doesn't exactly fill most people with a warm, fuzzy feeling. Billionaires have always had a fond spot in their hearts for population control. Ted Turner is a big supporter, as is Warren Buffett, a Gates family friend. But whatever you call it, population control or family planning, this isn't just a billionaire fad for the Gates family. Bill Gates Sr. has been deeply involved in this issue for decades, says Laurie S. Zabin, professor at the Johns Hopkins School for Public Health. Zabin, who served with Gates Sr. on the National Board of Planned Parenthood, was instrumental in getting the Gates Foundation grant for Johns Hopkins. But that doesn't mean Gates Sr. is the only one who cares about overpopulation, said Zabin. Gates Jr. has supported issues of real social concern, and certainly this is one of them. Gates Sr. agreed, "It's an interest he has had since he was a kid, and he has friends who are interested in supporting research into world population problems. People whom he admires. It's just a matter of a fit between his proclivities and mine." Population control. Overpopulation. Bill Gates is concerned about these things, just like his father was. And yet apparently he also wants to save humanity from a virus with a 99.97% survival rate. And he wants to do this by injecting everyone on the planet. He wants there to be less people on the planet. And he's very concerned about ensuring families are smaller. You'll have to excuse my cynicism, but I don't actually believe that all of this so-called philanthropy is actually coming from a place of benevolence, altruism, and charity. In a 1997 issue of George magazine, Bill Gates was interviewed, and he was asked a question about why he keeps his political views separate from Microsoft. He said, "Because the alternative is inappropriate. I have my personal views, then there's Microsoft's, a company that gets involved in very few political things. My own views are those you'd expect from somebody who feels like he's been very, very lucky and that the resources under his command are really society's resources. And I have to be clever about how I'm going to funnel those back in. I fund education projects. I fund population control. I'm very big on the United Way. So, with that in mind, I just want to replay something for you from earlier in this video, from the segment from Robert F. Kennedy Jr. In 2010, when Gates committed $10 billion to the World Health Organization, he said, "We must make this the decade of vaccines." A month later, Gates said in a TED talk that new vaccines could reduce population, and 4 years later, in 2014, Kenya's Catholic Doctors Association accused the World Health Organization of chemically sterilizing millions of unwilling Kenyan women with a tetanus vaccine campaign. Independent labs found a sterility formula in every vaccine tested. After denying the charges, World Health Organization finally admitted it had been developing the sterility vaccines for over a decade. The World Health Organization has been developing these sterility vaccines for over a decade? Well, maybe that's got something to do with this. This is from 1991. The World Health Organization Task Force on Vaccines for Fertility Regulation. Its formation, objectives, and research activities. Abstract. Over the past 18 years, the World Health Organization Task Force on Vaccines for Fertility Regulation has been supporting basic and clinical research on the development of birth control vaccines directed against the gametes of the pre-implantation embryo. These studies have involved the use of advanced procedures in peptide chemistry, hybridoma technology, and molecular genetics, as well as the evaluation of a number of novel approaches in general vaccinology. As a result of this international collaborative effort, a prototype anti-HCG vaccine is now undergoing clinical testing, raising the prospect that a total new family planning method may be available before the end of the current decade. I have to wonder to what degree Bill Gates was influenced by the fact that his father, William Gates Sr., was involved in Planned Parenthood. To what extent did that inspire his obsession with population control and so-called reproductive health? Bill Gates has massive financial influence across the big pharma and vaccine industries. And this man wants to inject the entire planet with something that is supposed to be a vaccine, but we know that there's no need for a vaccine for a virus that has a lower fatality rate than the flu. And the vaccine is highly experimental, alters human DNA, and has been rushed through trials to be the fastest ever produced. So what conclusions can you draw from everything that I've laid out in this video? The man wants the population to be reduced, but apparently he also wants to save everyone from this so-called deadly COVID-19. Do you get the same impression that I do? That this vaccine may be designed to reduce human fertility, to make people sterile? Is this the real reason that the elites and world governments are so desperate for everybody to take it? Is this the reason that coercive measures are being put in place to ensure vaccine uptake? I look forward to your comments below. Please share and download and distribute this video wherever you can.